So as I mentioned in the weekly email this morning, I spent most of this past week, Sunday and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, at the annual convention of Reform Rabbis, the Central Conference of American Rabbis, meeting this year just north of here in Philadelphia. There were great plenary sessions with really amazing speakers, fabulous prayer experiences, really moving prayer experiences, helpful workshops, practical rabbinics, spaces to connect with colleagues and brainstorm ideas together. We had 13 members of my ordaining class, folks who I went all through rabbinic school. It's the largest gathering of us in quite a while. Some of them I had not seen in years. And plus there are friends from youth group days, from camps that I've worked at, from committees I've been on, all kinds of folks. And in particular this year, about a dozen Israeli Reform rabbis who came from Israel to join us in convention to share their stories and to be supported by us all. Now, given that convention runs from Sunday to Thursday morning, like I said, I cut out on Wednesday night, but I have suggested for years that there should be a checkout gift that each rabbi gets. I think that the convention committee should find some of our best rabbinic sermon writers to come out with an outline, a prompt, four or five possible ideas for sermons based on this week's Torah portion and what we learned at convention, because we're all getting home on Thursday and we all have to preach on Friday. Don't you think that they should give us on our way, like a door prize, a parting gift, a sermon or an idea for a sermon that we could use, right? You check out, you get sample ideas, so the sermon thinking at least is already done. Alas, this has never come to fruition. I've never been on the convention committee, thankfully, and every time I suggest it to them, they say, oh, did you want to? No. So instead of remarks tonight from one of our movement's wisest rabbis who's had multiple hours of good night's sleep this week, instead, you'll get my musings and my thoughts. Our Torah portion this week is called Pekudei. It comes at the very end of the book of Exodus, and it is the end of the construction of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, the portable sanctuary the Israelites are going to wander with. And with the end of the project comes an accounting, a reckoning, a counting, an inventory. The text says, Elu Pekudei HaMishkan, here is the reckoning of the tabernacle. And it lists in great detail how many talents of silver were used, how much gold or bronze or copper or yarns or linens or gemstones, a very detailed inventory of all the supplies that were used and what was made out of them. All of this to create the Mishkan. Mishkan, again, we translate as tabernacle, but comes from the Hebrew root shachein, which means to dwell in, to dwell among. The Mishkan is a place for God to dwell among the Israelites, a sacred space, a place for God's presence in the midst of the community. Now, several times during the CCR convention, we as a group engaged in creating a sacred space. Not just at worship services, although those were truly wonderful, but also in small groups, places where we as rabbis could talk honestly and openly, where we could share vulnerabilities and insecurities. Did you know that rabbis have those too? These were places where we could connect with candor, with curiosity, with compassion, where we could feel free to say what we really wanted to say and really to hear what others were saying. And what were our materials that we used to make these spaces? Not gold and silver and crimson yarn and gemstones, but trust. The trust that we had in one another, a sense of true confidentiality, a sense of our shared values. And we made them into safe spaces and brave spaces that allowed us to have real conversations. And one of those times where we were able to create these small group safe spaces was for dialogue about Israel, our relationship with Israel, our connection with Israel, our reflections on the current situation, what we've been thinking and feeling. And it was really powerful to be able to share with one another. Now, we didn't all agree. I know you're thinking 400 rabbis. Of course they would agree, right? We had folks to the left, folks to the right, folks to the center. We didn't agree about policies or about politics, but we built spaces to dwell in together, to have honest conversations, built out of a shared love of Israel, the concept, the idea, the values, however we defined it, right? Built out of shared respect for one another, out of assuming the best intentions in the other instead of assuming the worst. Built out of a desire to really understand the other person's point of view, even if we disagreed. Dr. Betsy Stone, a retired psychologist and who has long had super wise insights into congregational life, was with us. And she taught us that when we say, I understand what you're saying and I disagree, this actually creates intimacy between people because it means we value the relationship. If we say, I understand what we're saying and you're wrong, that doesn't value the relationship at all. It values winning. And better to be in a place where we can value that relationship, where we can understand even if we disagree. Take all these materials and we can create a dwelling place to be in together. I'll tell you, this was especially true in listening to our colleagues from Israel. Now, being a Reform rabbi in Israel, it's not an easy thing to begin with. The government doesn't support the Reform rabbis to the same degree it supports the Orthodox Judaism as a state religion, but it's mostly not our flavor of Judaism that's preferred. The ultra-Orthodox don't recognize the Reform rabbis. Some of the Israeli public doesn't recognize them. But my Israeli Reform colleagues serve an ever-growing population of Israelis who want Judaism in a modern, progressive, non-Orthodox way. So these Israeli rabbis shared their stories of people from their congregations, the temple administrator whose niece is still held captive by Hamas, the graduates of their religious school who are serving in the army in Gaza or on the Lebanon border, the children of their community who know how to run to a shelter in 15 seconds or less at the sound of the alarm, the 90-year-old Holocaust survivor, older than the state itself, who serve as examples that Judaism can and will endure past this particular war. My colleagues told of their rabbinic roles of burying the victims of October 7th, of consoling the displaced people evacuated from their homes who have now been living in hotels for months, of working with organizations that support families, all the organizations that had been protesting the government's anti-democracy plans, and the Reform movement was in the forefront of that movement, all of those organizations now are working to support civil society. My colleagues are keeping open lines of communications with Arab Israelis, with Palestinians, with Muslims that they've had relationships with. They are understanding and sharing the pain of the innocents in Gaza, used as human shields, and working to ensure aid gets to the Gaza Strip. So we spoke to each other, we listened to each other, and we built a mishkan of understanding together, to experience together, to process together, not necessarily always to agree with each other, but to understand each other's experience and views. And it made me think how we might build such a space here at TBS for us. How could we craft spaces where people could share what they are feeling? Spaces where the goal is not to convince one another, not to demean one another or to berate one another for what you may or may not believe, but places to converse, to discuss, to process, to explore how we take our Jewish values and apply them to what's going on in Israel and in Gaza. What do we need to build these spaces, this mishkan of understanding? Not silver and gold and copper and bronze or blue and purple and crimson yarn, but trust and confidentiality, a sense of shared values, a desire for understanding, not the desire for winning, a willingness to truly hear, even if we disagree, a willingness to ask questions with openness and candor and curiosity and compassion. These are the building materials needed to construct the safe spaces in which we might gather. This would be a place where we could discuss all of the different nuances of the situation, the horrors of October 7th, including sexual violence and the intention of Hamas to destroy Israel and kill Jews, the severity of the Israeli response, the bombings and the ground troops. The cowardice and the crassness of Hamas hiding among civilians and their lack of concern for Palestinian casualties, Israel's military aims, and the level of concern there is or is not for civilian casualties, our desire to see a safe return for the Israeli hostages, the quandaries of providing aid to those in need, our moral obligation and the logistical challenges and how to ensure that it reaches civilians who are in need and prevent it from reaching Israel's enemies, the world around us and its willingness to exert pressure on Israel for concession and inability or unwillingness to do the same on Hamas, the narrative of oppressor and oppressed, of victim and assailant, the context of this war in relationship to Israel's other wars in history, the rise of Hamas as Islamic extremist in their ideology, the political calculations of the most right-wing government in Israel's history, and the cynical ineffectiveness and corruption of Palestinian leadership, the torrent of anti-Semitism that we have seen in our world, some of it masked as anti-Zionism and some of it not so masked at all. All of these things and so much more that we could discuss, but we need to have that safe and brave space in order to have those discussions. I'll tell you, for several months, I have been thinking about how to do this. I've been almost paralyzed with too many big ideas and big feelings. Two things have helped me move past that freeze. One was that one of my rabbi friends who I talked with in Philadelphia had actually just done something like this in his congregation, a program designed for small groups where people could come and be heard without rancor or debate or animosity, a container in which to share what they were thinking and feeling. He sent me his notes. So I've got some ideas about how we might come to do that in the coming weeks or months here. The other thing that moved me to finally take action is the example that I shared with you of us at convention, of being able to create shared sacred spaces to listen openly. Having experienced that and known what that might be, I think, I know that we can do this here. So stay tuned for what might yet come out of these musings, an effort for us at TBS to build a mishkan of understanding of our own. Okay, so maybe I don't need a checkout gift from the convention of free sermon ideas. Maybe I just created my own way of taking what I learned at convention and applying it and Torah to our lives. That's kind of what rabbis do anyway. One way or another, let us take account of the materials that we would bring, our candor, our curiosity and compassion, our trust, understanding, and shared sense of values. Let us find ways to use them, small and large, to build a dwelling place for our community's conversations. And that, too, truly will be a mishkan, a place where God can dwell. King Yehiratzon, may this be God's will. And together let us all say, Amen. Amen.